This is The Girlfriend's Guide to True Crime, the podcast where the girlfriend, Megan, guides the boyfriend,
Nick,
through the world of true crime. My little Christmas elves.
Hi guys.
This is the girlfriend's guide to
true crime.
Wow, I can talk today.
It's our new cleaning podcast, the girlfriend's guide to true grime.
True crime.
We're gonna be scrubbing grout today, people.
That's one way, you know. The girlfriend's guide to true crime, and I am your girlfriend Megan, and with me as always is
your boyfriend Nick.
That's right. And we have another one here for you. We have been, you know, trying to get back into it and get back to our, hopefully with the new year, our schedule of every other week giving you a new episode. But since it's the holiday season, we are going to bring you an episode that has a crime that takes place at Christmas.
During Christmas, yeah.
Yeah, and it also keeping with our horrible trend that we somehow got into of featuring children that have been murdered.
Yeah.
So
this is not intentional, people.
It just kind of ended up being that way. So maybe we'll try to pick a different theme for next year.
All bank heists.
Well, I already did one of those already, though. That was like the one that didn't have a dead child in it.
More bank heists.
All right, well, anyway, so what are we covering today? That brings us to what we're covering today. Well, some of you might have already figured it out from the clues that we already gave you, but what we are covering today is one that I know you've heard of because everybody has heard of this case.
It's probably one of the most famous ones to come out of the
90s. Definitely of our childhood, yeah. For sure. This one and the O.J. Simpson one were the big ones. And this one happened, you know, shortly after the O.J. Simpson trial. And it is the JonBenet Ramsey murder case.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an unsolved case still to this day. And I often thought I wouldn't be able to do it in one episode, but I am going to continue on with my way of, you know, pulling from some different articles and doing it a little bit more on the fly. So that's how we're going to try it out and see how it goes.
Yeah.
There's a lot that can be said about this case, but there's also so much that it's like, it's just, but we'll get into it. So, but first, before we get into the facts of the case, why don't we talk about what we're drinking tonight?
So, well, yeah, in keeping with the holiday season, I do have a bit of a festive drink. It's kind of hard to, you know, get into the horribleness of this case and, you know.
Well, we're doing a fun beverage.
We're doing our best here to mix, you know, the serious with the levity here. But
yeah,
we have a little beverage here called Saucy Eggnog.
Saucy Eggnog.
Oh, this boy comes to us from, once again, thetipsybartender.com. In our drink, we have 1.5 ounces of 151 rum.
I'm feeling that was going to be in here.
Yeah.
You said it was going to, it was
put you on your ass.
Yeah, yeah.
So then that'll definitely do it. And then 1.5 ounces.
John doesn't look thrilled about this.
I know. I'm sorry.
Our sound guy's like, oh no, I have to drink this. No.
I think I'm sleeping over.
Okay. It's just one drink. Right. So.
Like I said, you can cut on the couch with the dogs. They'll probably stay towards your feet if that makes it feel better. Anyway.
So yeah, we got 1.5 ounces of 151, 1.5 ounces of Kahlua, and then you just top off the rest of it with eggnog, shake it, pour it into your glass, and then top it off with some cinnamon and nutmeg.
Cinnamon and nutmeg. Your, I said this is nice. And you've served it to us in some of my, or our,
some of your Christmas glasses. Yeah.
I have a wine glass that says, "Let's get lit." And the I in the word lit is a Christmas tree. And that is our dog. You might hear them occasionally. So we have dogs now.
Going forward, you're going to hear barking. You're going to hear the little click clack of nails on the floor. So that's our dogs. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll try to, keep under. Anyway,
it'll be off and on. So
that's my glass. It's fun. Let's get lit with a little Christmas tree as the eye.
And I have a tumbler here, a nice green tumbler with the picture of the Grinch's face on it, and it says "Drink up, Grinches." which is nice and festive and exciting.
I like that one. We had the same one in red too somewhere. Yeah.
And I have a moose.
Yes,
I have the moose. Is this a Christmas vacation thing?
Christmas vacation, yes. So. Course, the the guest of honor is bestowed with the ultimate eggnog glass. Vessel, the Marty Moose eggnog glass.
Yes. Well, I'm truly honored. Thank you.
As you should be.
We should be covering that soon on our partner podcast, the Boyfriend's Guide to Pop Culture, since we recently saw it in the movie theater.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, so we'll have to cover that soon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep, all right.
I'll try to think of another, you know, maybe eggnog with not as strong rum in it next time.
Okay.
But eggnog again.
So, no, it was shared. Because
if we're going to use that for Christmas vacation, it's got to have eggnog. Okay. I
don't know. Okay. That's the other podcast.
Okay.
All right. So, let's clink and drink.
Clink and drink. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
It's a long way to get through another child murder case.
Mm. Mm. Okay. It's not as strong as I feared it would be, but
I'm very happy about that because I'm like, if this is strong, I'm not gonna be able to drink it anyway. But it actually tastes very good.
Mm-hmm.
It's very
definitely
good.
Went heavy on the eggnog in this because you want to cover up that taste of 151.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's just
let's get into it.
As always, we're gonna do a little victim spotlight that I'd like to do. So, named after her father, John Bennett, and her mother, Patricia, also called Patsy. JonBenet Patricia Ramsey was born on August 6, 1990, in Atlanta, Georgia. The youngest of two children, her older brother Burke was 9 at the time of her murder. JonBenet was an outgoing Southern girl who enjoyed being the center of attention. By age 6, she had already won multiple pageant titles thanks to her bouncy blonde hair, poised smile, and glittery costumes. Her father, a multimillionaire businessman, and her mother, who was also a former beauty queen, Miss West Virginia of 1977, doted on their daughter in every way they could. Their luxurious home was plush with everything JonBenet needed to live a comfortable life. So, I'm going to do a case summary of this, as well as a breakdown of like a timeline of things having to do with the
timeline
case.
Timeline of events, yeah.
I'm sure everyone knows a lot of stuff already about this case, but let's cover it. So, in the early morning hours of December 26, 1996, John and Patsy Ramsey awoke to find their 6-year-old daughter, JonBenet Ramsey, missing from her bed at their home in Boulder, Colorado. Patsy and John had woken up early to prepare for a trip when Patsy discovered a ransom note on the stairs demanding $118,000 for their daughter's safe return. Despite the note's warning not to involve police, Patsy immediately called them, as well as friends and family, in order to aid in the search for JonBenet Ramsey. Police arrived at 5:55 a.m. and found no signs of forced entry, but did not search the basement where her body would eventually be found. Before JonBenet's body was even found, there were many investigative mistakes made. Only JonBenet's room was cornered off, so friends and family roamed the rest of the house, picking up things and potentially destroying evidence. The Boulder Police Department also shared evidence they found with the Ramseys and delayed conducting their informal interviews with the parents. At 1 p.m., the detectives instructed Mr. Ramsey and a family friend to go around the house to see if anything was amiss. The first place they looked was the basement, where they found JonBenet's body. John Ramsey immediately picked up his daughter's body and brought her upstairs, which unfortunately destroyed potential evidence by disturbing the crime scene. During the autopsy, it was discovered that JonBenet Ramsey had died from asphyxiation due to strangulation in addition to a skull fracture. Her mouth had been covered in duct tape and her wrists and neck were wrapped with white cord. Her torso had been covered in a white blanket. There was no conclusive evidence of rape as no semen was found on the body and her vagina appeared to have been wiped clean, although a sexual assault had occurred. The makeshift garrote was made from using a length of cord and a part of a paintbrush from the basement. The coroner also found what was believed to be pineapple in JonBenet's stomach. Her parents do not remember giving her any the night before she died, but there was a bowl of pineapple in the kitchen which had her 9-year-old brother Burke's fingerprints on it. However, this meant little since time cannot be attributed to the fingerprints. The Ramseys maintained Burke was in his room all night asleep, and there was never any physical evidence to reflect otherwise. There are two popular theories in the Ramsey case, the family theory and the intruder theory. The initial investigation focused heavily on the Ramsey family for many reasons. The police felt that the ransom note was staged as it was unusually long, written using a pen and paper from the Ramsey's home, and demanded almost the exact amount of money that John had received as a bonus earlier that year. I had heard it's actually more of a Christmas bonus.
Yeah, it raises some questions there.
Yeah. Additionally, the Ramseys were reluctant to cooperate with police, though they later said this was because they feared the police would not conduct a full investigation and target them as easy suspects. However, all three members of the immediate family were questioned by investigators and submitted handwriting samples to compare to the ransom letter. Both John and Burke were cleared of any suspicion of writing the note, although much was made that Patsy could not be conclusively cleared by her handwriting sample. This analysis has not further supported by any other evidence. Despite a larger pool of suspects, the media immediately focusing on JonBenet's parents, and they spent years under the harsh limelight of the public eye. In 1999, a Colorado grand jury voted to indict the Ramseys on child endangerment and obstruction of a murder investigation. However, the prosecutor felt that the evidence did not meet beyond a reasonable doubt standard and declined to prosecute. JonBenet's parents were never officially named as suspects in the murder. Alternatively, the intruder theory had lots of physical evidence to support it. There was a boot print found next to JonBenet's body, which did not belong to anyone in the family. There was also a broken window in the basement, which was believed to be the most likely point of entry for an intruder. Additionally, there was DNA from drops of blood from an unknown male found on her underwear. The floors in the Ramsey's home were heavily carpeted, making it plausible for an intruder to have carried JonBenet's body downstairs without waking the family. One of the most famous suspects was John Carr. He was arrested in 2006 when he confessed to killing JonBenet by accident after he had drugged and sexually assaulted her. Carr was eventually dismissed as a suspect after it was revealed that no drugs had been found in JonBenet's system.
You kind of sort of used that as an excuse to get back into the country, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a false confession, and they were able to prove that, so... Police could not confirm he was in Boulder at the time, and his DNA did not match the profile generated from the samples found.
I heard that there was some weird thing, like, he would sign, like, there was a yearbook passage where he used, like, letters in a weird way, like, initials for something, and it was signed the same way that the ransom note, so that kind of sort of held water for a little bit, but it turned out there was nothing
to it. There's been so many theories. I started kind of going into a rabbit hole, just like a slight bit on some of the theories that people were covering and investigating. Now there's been so many numerous different television shows investigating different theories, and then I was like, you know what, I'm gonna stop. I can't do this because I've already thought about this a lot over the years, and just jumping into some other rabbit hole of some other TV show or whatever, it's just not gonna help me. Like, I want to, like, if they could come out with I've heard so many different things, like some, and even just the research that I've done, and even in this summary that I'm reading from an article that is cited in the show notes, that I can't find like a good list of solid evidence of what they do have. I hear so many different things about it. Like, I've heard before, it's not drops of blood in her underwear, but it was just DNA found in her underwear, and that they could possibly, in one show, they said, well, that DNA could have been from the manufacturing process. So, like, I don't even...
That's weird.
Exactly. I don't know. So, it's just so convoluted at this point. But I want to get as much of, like, the general information and background and facts. Uh-huh. We'll talk about theories in the discussion section. So, all right. Much of the recent investigation in the case revolves around DNA profiles developed from the sample found in her underwear and the touch DNA later developed from her long johns. The profile from her underwear was entered into CODIS, the National DNA Database, in 2003, but no matches have been identified. In 2006, Boulder District Attorney Mary Lacey took over the case. She agreed with the federal prosecutor that the intruder theory was more plausible than the Ramseys killing their daughter. Under Lacey's lead, investigators developed a DNA profile from touch DNA, DNA left behind by skin cells on her long johns. In 2008, Lacey released a statement detailing the DNA evidence and fully exonerating the Ramsey family, saying in part, "The Boulder District Attorney's Office does not consider any member of the Ramsey family, including John, Patsy, or Burke Ramsey, as suspects in this case. we make this announcement now because we have recently obtained this new scientific evidence that adds significantly to the exculpatory value of the previous scientific evidence. We do so with full appreciation for the other evidence in this case. Local, national, and even international publicity has focused on the murder of JonBenet Ramsey. Many members of the public came to believe that one or more of the Ramseys, including her mother or her father or even her brother, were responsible for this brutal homicide. Those suspicions were not based on evidence that had been tested in court. Rather, they were based on evidence reported by the media. In 2010, the case was officially reopened with renewed focus on the DNA samples. Further testing has been conducted on the samples, and experts now believe that the sample is actually from two individuals rather than one. In 2016, it was announced that the DNA would be sent to the Colorado Bureau of Investigation to be tested using more modern methods, and authorities hope to develop an even stronger DNA profile of the killer. In 2016, CBS aired the case of JonBenet Ramsey, which implied her then 9-year-old brother Burke was the killer, despite the fact he was cleared by the DNA evidence that proved the existence of the intruder. Now, this is where I was talking about that they talked about that in this show. I watched it. It was very convincing that Burke probably did it. Burke filed a $750 million lawsuit against CBS for defamation. The case was settled in 2019, and while the terms of the settlement were not disclosed, his lawyer stated the case was amicably resolved to the satisfaction of all parties. The JonBenet Ramsey case is still open and remains unsolved. We'll discuss more of that special because I watched it in the discussion. So, let's do a timeline of events just to give people an idea of like what all has gone on since this happened.
Okay.
So, December 25th, 1996, the Ramseys attend a Christmas party at a family friend's house. JonBenet gets a bike for Christmas. After attending a Christmas party hosted by family friend Fleet White, the Ramseys go home and JonBenet goes to bed. Some theories say she snuck back downstairs and fought with her brother over a late-night snack of pineapple. Indeed, the undigested tropical fruit was found in her stomach. December 26, 1996, JonBenet goes missing. 5:30 a.m., when Patsy gets up to make coffee, she discovers a 2.5-page handwritten ransom note on the back stairs leading to the kitchen that says her daughter has been kidnapped, according to the Denver Post. You will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills and remaining $18,000 in 20 bills, the note demanded, according to Psychology Today. Oddly, that was the exact amount of John's Christmas bonus. The note also said to not call the police, but Patsy calls 911. Before 6 a.m., police officer Rick French arrives at the home and does a search. He pauses by the door that JonBenet was later found behind, but doesn't open it. So this right here is different from the other account I just said, because it does discuss that the officers did go into the basement. They just didn't go into the room that JonBenet's body was
in.
Okay. Early afternoon, the first detective on the scene, Linda Arndt, pulls aside John and White, who have come over to console his friends. Arndt tells them to do a top-to-bottom search of the home. I just have to note here that officers should never tell civilians to do a search of a home for anything.
Yeah, it should be their job because, you know,
yes,
that's what happens, like, happens, you know.
One of the hugest, like, really shows you how horribly they botched this case.
Yeah.
It was during that search that John opened the door to the basement spare room, ironically where the Christmas presents had been hidden, and saw JonBenet's body. It looked like she had been strangled and her mouth and neck were covered with duct tape. He picked up the body and ran screaming upstairs. Arndt later moved the body closer to the Christmas tree upstairs by bringing her upstairs and leaving the basement door open. Much of the evidence became tainted. 10:45 p.m., the Boulder County Coroner's team removed the young girl's body from the house. December 28, 1996. The Ramseys cooperate with authorities. The family goes to the Boulder Police Station and they willingly give hair, blood, and handwriting samples. The police later state that John's grown children, John, Andrew, and Melinda, were out of town when the murder occurred, so are not suspected. Again, like so many accounts, things are inaccurate. His daughter, Melinda, died before JonBenet died in a car accident. Anyway, December 29th, 1996, the family flies to Atlanta. Just days after the murder, the Ramseys go back to their former hometown of Atlanta. Okay. Well, I'm sorry. It was her half-sister, Elizabeth. Okay, so she means another half-sister. Sorry. That was my bad. Okay. So December 31st, JonBenet's funeral is held. The six-year-old is laid to rest in Marietta, Georgia, next to her older half-sister, Elizabeth, who had died in a car accident in 1992. About 200 family and friends attend a ceremony at the family's old church. January 1st, 1997, John and Patsy give a New Year's Day interview. JonBenet's parents give a very difficult 45-minute long interview to CNN from Atlanta, where they are now staying with family. While the Boulder police had been reassuring the community there wasn't a murderer on the run, Patsy said on television, "There's a killer on the loose. If I were a resident of Boulder, I would tell my friends to keep your babies close to you. There's someone out there." She added, "America is suffering because they have lost faith in the American family," citing the example of a mystery that had really happened with the O.J. Simpson case. Again, this happened right before JonBenet's case. "We are a Christian, God-fearing family. We love our children. We would do anything for our children." January 2nd, 1997, investigators follow the family to Georgia. A team of five detectives from Boulder fly to Atlanta, according to CNN. Investigators are shocked the Ramseys granted the TV interview since they had claimed to be too emotional to talk to the police. Again, a huge, huge issue that the police did not immediately take her parents into separate rooms and their son, Burke, and interview them that day.
Yeah.
Before they even found her body, mm-hmm. honestly. Like, that should have been happening immediately.
Yeah.
So, anyway. January 3rd, 1997, detectives revealed the ransom note was written inside the house. Detectives announced that the note was written on a paper and pad from inside the house, meaning it was likely written after the murder. John and Patsy return to Boulder. Boulder cops go to Charlevoix, Michigan to search through a summer home the Ramsey family owns. January 6, 1997, school resumes at JonBenet's school. After the Christmas and New Year's holidays, class resumes at JonBenet's former school. Teachers and counselors help the young children to try to understand what happened, even though it continues to be a mystery. January 8, 1997, news comes out that there may have been a practice ransom note. Reportedly, there is evidence that the person who wrote the ransom note first practiced it on another piece of paper. February 27, 1997, JonBenet's half-brother is questioned. The alibi of John Andrew is re-examined, even though he was allegedly out of town when it happened. March 7, 1997, a handwriting analysis eliminates John, but not Patsy. Based on expert analysis, detectives confirm that John didn't write the ransom note, but said there's a chance Patsy may have. March 8th, the police searched the Ramsey, Michigan home again. The police head back there reportedly looking for unrehearsed handwriting samples to see if Patsy wrote the ransom note. April 3rd, DNA testing takes place. While there had already been a DNA test done by the Colorado Bureau of Investigation, a secondary one was done by Maryland's Cellmark Laboratories, according to Denver Post. April 19th, JonBenet's parents become the prime suspects. John and Patsy became the prime suspects of the investigation, according to CNN. Obviously, the focus is on these people, according to Boulder's DA, Alex Hunter. April 30th, Patsy is questioned for 6.5 hours. This is 4 months.
After the fact.
Formal interviews are conducted with John for 2 hours and Patsy for 6.5 hours. These new statements place the initial ones made right after the murder. May 2nd, John and Patsy speak to local media. The victim's parents talk to the local press, including Nine News. John stumbles over his daughter's name and addresses the rumors of her possibly being sexually molested, calling those most hurtful innuendos. Patsy says, "I'm appalled that anyone would think that John or I would be involved with such a hideous and heinous crime, but let me assure you I didn't kill JonBenet." May 14th, the DNA results have no surprises. Sources report there are no surprises in the results of the DNA test, but don't specify what that means. July 12th, JonBenet's bedroom furniture is moved to Atlanta. Former Child Beauty Queen's belongings are moved across the country on a moving truck. July 14th, 1997, autopsy reports are released. The previously sealed autopsy results are released. They confirm a deep ligature around the victim's neck and another around the right wrist, evidence that she was bound and strangled, and also say that blood and abrasions were found in the girl's vaginal area, and that she was struck on the head violently enough to cause bleeding and an 8.5-inch fracture to her skull, according to CNN. January 15th, 1998, the Ramses refused to interview with authorities. The Ramses asked to review evidence before giving more interviews to the police. The request is denied. January 29th, John and Patsy submit the clothes they were wearing. Okay, this is over a year later. They are finally getting the clothes from the parents that they were wearing that night.
Could have been washed any amount of times.
Yeah, I mean, you're shocked that they even have them. So 2 months after the police requested the parents' hand, 2 months after they requested it. So still a year later that they finally request it. The parents hand over the clothes they were wearing the night of the crime. The Ramses turn in 2 shirts, a pair of pants, and a sweater. Okay, I need a drink. Sorry. March 12th, a grand jury investigation is called. Investigators formally call for grand jury investigation since 15 months have passed, already passed since the murder. June 3rd, evidential investigations continue. The case's lead investigator, Bark Beckner, says there's no significant results from the 1,058 pieces of evidence taken from the home. Details are not shared. June 10th through the 12th, 1998, JonBenet's brother, Burke, is questioned. A year and a half later, JonBenet's older brother, Burke, who was 9 at the time of the crime and the only other one known to be in the house that night, is also questioned for the first time. He's now 11. August 6th, Denver Detective Steve Thomas resigns, calling the case crippled. Detective Steve Thomas writes an 8-page resignation letter saying that Hunter's office has crippled the case since elements have been thoroughly compromised, according to the Denver Post. Governor Roy Romer inquires as to whether he needs to step in. He eventually does. August 19th, White asks for Hunter to be dismissed. Family friend White asks to have someone other than Hunter assigned to the JonBenet case. August 20th, 1998, Burke's voice is reportedly overheard on the 911 call. Originally, the Ramses had said Burke was asleep the morning his sister was discovered missing and didn't wake up until the police arrived. However, in the 911 tape that has now been enhanced, Burke's voice is reportedly heard in the background. September 15th, the grand jury begins their investigation. Even though they were selected 5 months prior, the grand jury starts their investigation. September 24th, another detective quits. Setting too much focus on the Ramsey parents, homicide detective Lou Smith quits and says in his resignation letter that a very dangerous killer is still out there. This gives the Ramseys the fuel they need to convince authorities to shift the focus of the investigation. Now, he's also known to have continued to, even after retiring, to up until he died, continue to work on this case.
Yeah.
And even his family members have taken, you know, over taking some things. He has a lot of files and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't really know what's going on currently or what has been developed, but I think a lot of, you know, different theories out there could be the result of his investigation work, investigative work. So, October 13th, 1998, the grand jury begins hearing forensic evidence. They start hearing the case, hearing about forensic evidence like DNA, hair, and fibers from the scene. They also tour the family's home in Boulder 9 days later. October 20th, John faces Stephen Miles in court. Two stories in the National Enquirer had said an anonymous source said John believed photographer Stephen Miles killed JonBenet. John goes back to Colorado to face Miles in the civil case. I don't know a whole lot about that one. So December 3rd, more family DNA is collected. Evidence is requested of 5 Ramsey family members, although they are not suspects, though investigators simply have to identify DNA that's at the house in order to be able to determine if it's the family, if it should be there, if it doesn't belong there.
Yeah.
So a teddy bear takes center stage January 28th, 1999. Investigators appeal to the online community to try to find information about a Santa Claus teddy bear that was reportedly found in JonBenet's bedroom. They hope to find the manufacturer and where it was sold so they can link more dots. March 18th, the first detective on the case resigns. Yet another resignation. Arndt resigns because of all the criticism. May 9th, 1999, Burke is no longer a suspect. Well, for some people, he's not at this point.
For the time being, at least.
Yeah. Now 12 years old, Burke is secretly questioned by the grand jury, and he is officially declared a witness only, not a suspect. September 13th, 1999, Detective Arndt says he knows who killed JonBenet. In an interview on Good Morning America, Arndt says he knows who the killer is but won't say who. December 30th, John Bonet's half-siblings testify. John, Andrew, and Melinda, who are already been cleared in March 1997, testify in front of the grand jury. October 13th, 1999, the district attorney says there is no sufficient evidence. Hunter says that there isn't sufficient evidence to charge anyone in the murder. March 17th, 2000, the Ramseys publish a book. John and Patsy release the death of innocence about their daughter's murderer, along with the publicity campaign to promote it. May 24th, 2000, John and Patsy hold a press conference. Chabonet's parents hold a news conference to announce that lie detector tests confirm they are innocent in the death of their daughter. However, the test wasn't run by the FBI and not acceptable to investigators. June 24th, 2006, Patsy dies of cancer. With no answers in sight at the time of her death, JonBenet's mother, Patsy, a former pageant queen herself, passes away at the age of 49 from ovarian cancer. She had been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in 1993. June 29th, 2006, Patsy's buried next to JonBenet. September 12th, 2016, Burke breaks his silence but reveals no answers. After 20 years, JonBenet's brother, Burke, sits down for an interview with Dr. Phil. It probably has some pedophile in the pageant audience, he said twice. So, I next want to discuss one of the big pieces of evidence, and I want to read the transcript from the ransom note. Okay, so here is what the ransom note said. Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We do not respect your business, We do respect your business, but not the country that it serves. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. She is safe and unharmed, and if you want her to see 1997, you must follow our instructions to the letter. You will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills and the remaining $18,000 in $20 bills. Make sure that you bring an adequate size attaché to the bank. When you get home, you will put the money in a brown paper bag. I will call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow to instruct you on delivery. The delivery will be exhausting, so I advise you to be rested. If we monitor you getting the money early, we might call you early to arrange an earlier delivery of the money and hence earlier delivery pickup of your daughter. Any deviation of my instructions will result in the immediate execution of your daughter. You will also be denied her remains for proper burial. The two gentlemen watching over your daughter do not particularly like you, so I advise you not to provoke them. Speaking to anyone about your situation, such as police, FBI, etc., will result in your daughter being beheaded. If we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies. If you alert bank authorities, she dies. If the money is in any way marked or tampered with, she dies. You will be skinned for electronic devices, and if any are found, she dies. You can try to deceive us, but be warned that we are familiar with law enforcement countermeasures and tactics. You stand a 99% chance of killing your daughter if you try to outsmart us. Follow our instructions, and you stand a 100% chance of getting her back. You and your family are under constant scrutiny as well as the authorities. Don't try to grow a brain, John. You're not the only fat cat around, so don't think that killing will be difficult. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good Southern common sense of yours. It is up to you now, John. Victory! SBTC. That is the note. So with that, we're going to take a break and then we'll come back and discuss
the details of the case.
Yep. Hey, we're back from break, and we're having, you know, Nick just had his booster shot. He's not feeling the best, and this subject matter in general is just not, like, we're kind of over it, you know, but I wanted to talk about it. It's one of the first really, really big, high-profile cases we've done, you know, and it's an unsolved one. There's so much you could talk about because there's so many theories.
Yeah.
And da da da. And in my research, I couldn't even find a good list of evidence that they had. Like, and everything I read, some of the facts were a little different everywhere. So I don't want to get into rabbit holes of these different theories. We can touch on them. Let's discuss it. But, you know, let's leave it somewhat open-ended because we don't know what's going to happen. I I mean, I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts about whether you think this case will ever be solved?
I'm hoping it'll be solved. I mean, with the advances that we have in technology, even from 1996 to about now, there's been leaps and bounds, in especially with genetic coding and DNA and stuff like that. So hopefully it will be solved in our lifetime. I don't know, but maybe it will be.
What do you think?
Yeah, I just think with it being, 25 years ago and the absolute inept job that the police did and detectives did is letting them, you said it was a year after the event that they turned over their clothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that all this stuff can just be washed and there's so much stuff that's going to get muddled and there won't be, I feel like there won't be a conclusive 100% enough for a full jury to say, no matter what, I think it's Burke. I think it's the brother. I think it's, you know, it's like, because it's been so diluted over time that it, like, unfortunately, it probably will never.
They did a shit job of collecting evidence.
Everything.
The whole thing was completely botched, horrible. I don't care how bungled this might sound. I hope that they have, you know, learned their lesson from this. And honestly, there has been a lot of lessons learned since even O.J. Simpson case and the things that happened with that case. And we're talking, this was right after that. And along with our advancements in technology and DNA. And I think it's going to be solved? I would love for it to be solved. Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not. But there's still some chance. I mean, I feel like as we've advanced in technology and they're going back and retesting things, there is a possibility that maybe they will, you know, have some DNA. I couldn't find, you know, there's been reports that they've done this, but I couldn't find any information whether they definitely, you know, found. They said that they definitely found foreign male DNA, maybe even up to two, but it's still like I don't have much detail on that. And, you know, where exactly it was. I mean, I think there's touch DNA and that kind of thing. They should hopefully maybe be able to go back and swab the garage and see if, you know, there was DNA on that. There could be DNA of who put that on her neck. Now, but.
It's been so long. That's the toughest thing, though.
That's
now,
exactly.
With it being so
and
long
we
and everything.
We don't know the condition of which it was collected because they clearly effed everything up.
Yeah.
They could have collected so much more other evidence if they hadn't screwed it up so much. You know what I mean? Like, even if they do get DNA from that, how can they be 100% sure it wasn't contaminated?
Mm-hmm. When they do this testing, you know more than I would, you know, with your background. Mm-hmm. But when they do the DNA stuff and they separate that, does that stay on record until they find a match? Because you definitely have degradation over time.
Well, here's that's a different thing between.
Because what I was
the results of a DNA match, or whether the sample was degraded. So the fact that they found DNA, their results might not be as good if it had some degradation to it compared to if our technology was able to take that sample right after the murder and test it, that kind of thing. But they haven't released, as far as I know, any information on like how, you know. And any degradation that might have affected the DNA.
But the DNA that they found is, stays on record, right?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a database.
Because you said
in a database, it's computerized. It's in a report. They can, you know, it's not, once it's tested and they find it, it's completely digitalized information.
Well, okay. Yeah. So in, actually, thinking of it in that case, I could see it. I could see it being solved, especially with these 23andMe's and all this stuff where people are just giving up their DNA where. You know, it's a worry of mine to do it in case I might find children or whatever of mine.
But these types
of things happen where it's like you find people find long lost siblings.
Yeah, cases have been solved
I'm sure that they
have. Cases have been solved. That's the Golden State Killer was solved.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've heard stories about people finding out that like the person that they thought was their father wasn't actually their father. Yeah. You know, kind of thing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I could see it being solved like that, or solved with, you know, a 50 years from now, tell all, I'm the one that killed JonBenet Ramsey.
Yeah,
whoever it is that says it.
Evidence to batch up because we already had a false confession. With the case, so they would have to have, you know, solid evidence, and there's a lot of, you know, different. theories.
Sorry, I'm making faces at our dog.
I didn't even realize. Like, he just made this like random weird face, and then I look over at our dog. And he actually looks happy, which I'm surprised because he's just
not barking,
shaking like a leaf. Yeah.
I gotta say, it's been great having the dogs for the podcast. They spice it up everything. Like that,
yeah. Oh yeah.
So
yeah, he actually had a happy face. Anyway,
that's the ironic part. He's the one spicing it up, and Paprika is over there sleeping.
So
he's a spicy boy.
So I have a question for you, Meg. I know. Yep. I know that, you know, you don't like to make assumptions or whatever with these types of, you know, things, but who do you think did it?
Okay, so I for a long time I had this very like I just simply don't know. Like I really just don't. I understand that her family, her parents were under suspicion, and it was before I really like thought about this and, you know, read over myself the ransom note, you know? Like, I'd heard things about it. I knew what was supposedly written in the house. The ransom note, to me, is the biggest...
indicator?
The biggest, like, whatever you think... Remember this note? Oh, that's right. It doesn't make any freaking sense compared to, like, other evidence that, like, would draw you to an adulterer.
Well, it just seems odd to me, especially with, like, I guess, would you say it was in, like, 2009 or 2011? They did that story thinking that it was the brother.
So it was 2016. And to talk about this, so, like...
Oh, I was way off.
No. So I did mention in my summary before the CBS thing. And so I was very much like, I don't know. And then I watched that, and I thought, oh, her brother did it.
Well, here's my thing. Like, you read the ransom note, and he was nine?
Yeah, he was 9 years old.
So he was nine when it happened. Like, that's not, I mean, like, I know some people have extensive vocabularies. I'm next to one person that has quite a vocabulary. But
he wrote that name's ransom note, though. The theory is that let's be clear, he would have been 9 years old at the time.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he purposely murdered his sister at all.
Okay.
The theory behind that that happened in that television show was that his mother fixed him a snack, which I believe was verified by Patsy, that they enjoyed a snack of, like, pineapple with milk, and they would eat it like cereal, I guess. And that JonBenet was put to bed and she wasn't given the snack. And that JonBenet must have come down and sneaked some of his snack, and he was maybe mad at her. So there was this random flashlight that's been shown. And other theories, they've mentioned it on the counter. There's this big, like, I actually have one very similar. I think I probably got in the 90s from my grandfather. Black flashlight, metal.
Yeah, big mag light.
And the indention in her skull was very similar to what could have been from, like, that flashlight. Well, that maybe Burke was pissed off at her because she came and stole some of his snack. Yeah. He hit her in the head with the flashlight. But the thing is that didn't kill her. It contributed to her death, but when she was strangled, it was when she was killed. Mm-hmm. So they thought that maybe the parents thought that he killed her by accident and was then covering it up for him.
Yeah, okay.
And then added the garrote, and that, like, there really wasn't. I mean, I've heard very different things too, as far as the
is that
it,
now is that is that the theory? I know you said we're not going to go into theories.
No,
is that the theory that you tend to believe the most?
I definitely lean towards it, but then I lean towards it, especially because it does support the crazy note. Because there's a lot of issues with the note. I had a lot of issues with the note, especially because it was written there, like, with their own paper. Like,
yeah.
Who that? Like,
and a very specific amount, too.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, the same amount as the father got for a bonus.
Exactly. I mean, somebody knew something.
They knew what he got for
Christmas bonus.
Right. And they had to, I mean, and that doesn't mean that it wasn't some stranger that wrote it and practiced writing it on that paper they found in there that, you know, again, it was saying that she was going to be kidnapped, not that she was going to be found murdered there. Yeah. So it could very well have been that it could have been intruders or someone that knew the family that maybe went in there. That's why he knew the bonus and da-da-da. And when they were trying to take her away, that
causing too
they
much
accidentally
noise
killed her.
Yeah.
And then the note got left, and they just left her downstairs. And then there was also the theory of because there is the open or broken window in the basement, as well as a suitcase at the bottom of that window that some people think they they found some, I think, a fiber of her clothing inside the suitcase, supposedly.
Okay.
That they think that maybe she was placed in there, and they were going to try to get, you know, like, get, you know, kidnap like, her.
Yeah, remove her from the house. Put
a sticking her in the suitcase. Or that maybe that was how they he entered, or maybe they put the suitcase there so that they could step on it to reach up through the window again and get out.
Uh-huh.
So these are all things I've heard of possibilities that they're speculating on. In this special that said they thought that Burke was the one who did it,
uh-huh.
They basically showed a lot of pictures and information about that window alone, and that there were cobwebs there that weren't disturbed, and like how could a person come in and out through there? But again, like. Before I continue, I meant to say, I was trying to say before, was that before we discuss more about Burke, because I do think it is a plausible theory. I'm not saying for sure that Burke did it, but he was 9 years old. I don't think he did it on purpose. I think he was pissed off at his sister. Hey, me and my brother have hurt each other a lot when we were kids fighting. So if he did it, and even if he did do it by accident, and they wouldn't have had to cover it up.
If it was an accidental death,
he wouldn't have been held responsible for that. They might not have known that though. And after having, you know, John had lost a daughter already from a car accident, and now JonBenet, and you know, you think like they didn't want to lose another child to prison, and maybe they covered
it up. Also, yeah, you lost a daughter, and then you lost another daughter. And then you lose your son, basically. You never know. No matter what, he would have done some sort of juvenile detention or something. Or some sort of therapy or something along that. So I can definitely see the protectiveness of the family coming in and the parents, you know.
Yeah, them freaking out. What do we do? Let's make up this ransom to make it seem like, you know, she was murdered by other people who came in to kidnap her. Because it was also, the ransom note is incredibly unusual. You know, I did read it for everyone. It had, I'm not sure, Nick, our pop culture guy, could probably say, did you recognize any phrases from the note that sounded familiar to you?
Well, something like beheading and stuff, that definitely sounds, you know,
kind of. There was actual phrases in the note from the movie Ransom and Speed.
Oh, okay.
All right.
In the note. So, like, it right there shows you, like, and even even John Douglas, who's a famous FBI profiler, although he does believe that it was an intruder in this case, he said that, you know, it was definitely not someone who was experienced that wrote this.
Yeah.
And it was really long, and they practiced it, and it was, again, had to have been written there.
Yeah.
And to me, that seems like really stupid. Like, why would you go and do this and write this really long ass note where you're waiting there to get caught?
Yeah,
you know. I mean, unless it's like the middle of the night, they knew they were past the point of. I just don't know.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of. It seems like a lot of inconsistencies and a lot of.
It's just there's odd
a there's a bear, there's and a lot and, of like, bungling stuff.
Well, there's an amateur level to it, like you said. Like that it seems like, and who are amateur kidnappers and amateur killers? Like the family, I would hope so at least. But
if he had competent police work, they probably would have nailed it. But
they might have figured that out, because everything was so. I mean, all the evidence on her body was tainted in my mind, because the fact that her father, who also it was and should have been, because every family member should be considered a suspect until they are cleared, went down, found the body, and brought it upstairs. And then that. The one person that was there, the one detective, later moved her again.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing was, whether they should have shut down the entire scene, removed everyone from the house. They also, what I didn't cover before, was that the Ramseys invited their friends over. They had their friends coming over and into the house and walking around the house.
Yeah.
And the, like, that officer was like, oh, hey, you guys search the house. Like, no.
Yeah. Oh, that's almost just like, bringing in more. Let's bring in as much DNA as possible, and let's make
taint this
scene. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You know?
So even, like, how now, can we even be 100% sure or trust it? Like, we might be able to conclude that someone is the murderer. Whether or not we'll get a conviction for them because of the evidence being so poor is another thing.
Well, I'm sure that whoever the murderer is has been accused of being the murderer already. in one way, or and then been, you know, proven proven not guilty.
Everyone's been accused of being the murderer.
But now,
the court of public opinion, especially on the parents, was like already out even before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the media really did, and I have to point out, like, it's really evident. And
that probably was another thing contributing to it too.
Is how the media can spin things a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, so I wasn't really sure. Then I watched that show, and I was convinced. You know, because also in the show was like people that I've met in real life at CrimeCon. I respect them. I listen to their podcast. They're professionals in their field, FBI profilers, Scotland Yard people. Henry Lee was one of them. You know, like, I think Werner Spitz, I don't know. Anyway, we're talking like the top people in on this show talking how they think that the evidence pointed to Burke. But they also, there's a lot of evidence they didn't discuss on the TV show. And it's very compelling. I started watching another show where I said I can't go down these rabbit holes where they were with her father. John was actually on it discussing it with this investigator. They talked about the one guy I mentioned that had worked on it till his death and his family has picked it up and how he has files upon files. So some of it, they were investigating some of that. Again, I had to turn it off because I just couldn't.
Yeah.
And they were also doing these other, investigation into a pageant dad and this whole convoluted, theory with a cult leader that might have been responsible. Like, it was a lot. Like, it was just, like, there's so many different thoughts and theories, you know, that a lot of people think, like, you know, maybe it was one of her parents, like, freaked out and, you know, just got angry and killed her, too. Like, I had a friend who told me that that's what she thought, that Patsy just got pissed off at her.
Well, it seems, I don't know what the theory name is, but it's that, like, more than, like, most likely the logical answer.
Occam's razor,
yeah.
The simplest answer is usually the correct one.
Yeah, and it seems like, and any time you get into, like, bringing in cults or bringing in,
conspiracies
or any of this stuff, it's like, so the thought of the brother getting in an argument, whacking the sister,
the parents covering up, as
crazy as that sounds for someone like me, which I wouldn't want to do. I would never do something like that or whatever, but it seems crazy to me, but that's the most logical of any of it.
A lot of people make really horrible, poor decisions when they're put in a situation like that.
Yeah. Especially at 9 years old. I mean, you're not.
Yeah. Oh, even the parents dealing with, like, their 9-year-old just hit their, you know, how old was she? 4 or 5 year old daughter and killed her. And, like, how can you really understand how they were feeling or what they were thinking in that moment? Mm-hmm. Like, it had to be, you know, like, if that was what happened, inconceivable, you know? And I think it doesn't kind of, it's a very simple explanation as to what could happen. It explains that note.
You run a lot of gamuts of emotions and stuff. Like, what are we going to do? How are we going to go through this?
Yeah.
You know, what should be done in this case? If they search here, well, I should go down and I should be the one to find her and to do that. It incurs a lot of thought being put into it on however short amount of time between, you know, things being done.
Well, and that's thing, too, is, like, and a lot of people then point out, too, I mean, she actually died of strangulation from having this garrote made from, like, twine or rope and a paintbrush that I think was Patsy's. I think items were found in the basement. And then there's also the speculation of sexual assault, which, again, I see and read different things as to whether there's actual evidence of that. Mm-hmm. And then people saying that there isn't. So what is it? You know, I don't really know. And then some people think, well, you know, a parent, even if they're trying to cover up for Brooke and they thought she was dead and she wasn't, you know, they wouldn't have faked it or, like, hurt her that badly trying to pretend that it was that they actually did kill her. And then that some people claim that there's photographs that show that she had, you know, scratched herself from trying to get the garrote off, but then I haven't heard the other places, so it's just, like, really confusing. And of course it's still an open investigation. So, like, not everything's been released, but there's so much stuff out there that it's just, like, I don't even know. I flip-flopped a lot on what I think about this. Because then there are some things that, like, you know, I'm like, you know what? It could be an intruder. Maybe it could be an intruder. The note still throws me off a lot with that. I just can't, like, explain.
Well, I mean, I feel like with the note, it would have to be a targeted intrusion. to know the family, to know how much the how much money you really have.
Yeah.
It's like if I came here and I kidnapped one of your dogs and I left you a ransom note, you know, I would have to think inside of your financial range what kind of a ransom I would want. I want to be like, hey, give me $500,000 for your dog. If you don't have $500,000, there's no way I'm going to get it. So I don't worry, Meg, I'm not going to steal your dog. Megan is starting to frown and looking like I'm about to steal her dog.
She's a little worried.
Well, they end up missing. I know, you know who I'm coming after.
Yeah, I'll treat them well. I'll treat them well. I have a doggy door at my house too for when we had a pug and a Boston Terrier living at our house. Yes, my sister had a pug. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, well, we're gonna follow that on my own podcast, The Weekly Pug, that I do. You know, check it out.
So. Cover our dog.
Look at his face. He's so excited.
He is
excited.
We have
to do it. The Weekly Pug.
Weekly Pug.
Oh, great. Now I'm going to be doing another podcast. Oh, great.
Yeah, great. I'm going to be producing another podcast.
Oh, great.
Well, you did this to yourself.
Yeah, oh, great. Yeah, that is true. That is true. I want to say thank you for involving me in this part, you know, so I'm glad
the
I can.
Weekly Pug or
this part of the girlfriend's guide to true crime. Yeah.
You're only doing it because I don't feel good because of my booster shot.
Yeah. Which I totally feel. I felt
kind of wiped out a little bit.
I felt the same way with my booster shot. So I feel you on that. Yeah.
Mine's scheduled for next week. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, if I'm wiped out, ugh.
Yeah, well, yeah, we're
going to be a happy camper.
We're going to be recording a podcast the day after that, too, just so, you know, just so Meg can feel it.
All right, next Wednesday night, or this Wednesday, upcoming Wednesday night. You want to come over? We'll do another one.
What are we going to call that? The bi-yearly booster shot?
Yeah, the bi-yearly booster
shot podcast.
Booster shot podcast.
We're going to do a podcast after we get our booster shots.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to go down to the Walgreens, and we're going to interview people when they come out, too. So,
how you feeling today?
Okay. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Did you get your booster shot?
Excuse me, sir.
Give us a call tomorrow and let us know how you're feeling.
Yeah. Go away. Get away from me. The very fringe.
Well, is there any other questions or things that you want to talk about? There's a lot that we could. We've not discussed a lot, but part of me kind of feels done with it.
Yeah. I hope it gets solved. You know, the jury's out on the family. You know, the media didn't really do them any favors. But
no, they didn't.
It's one of those cases that probably won't get solved within our lifetime. But if it does, you know, it'll...
Yeah,
it'd be satisfying.
Yeah, they did have come out and said that, you know, they basically exonerated them, but there's been a lot of saying that was done way too soon and not with the proper evidence, you know, that really could have conclusively.
Yeah.
So it's been one of those things, like, I don't know. Honestly, at the end of the day, I don't think her parents did this.
No.
I think if they were involved and wrote the note, it was because it was an accident and Burke did it.
Yeah, they're just trying to cover up. Yeah, they're not malicious people along those lines. I mean, they're malicious enough to put their kids through pageants and all that other crap, but they're not going to kill them, though. Yeah, I feel like with the exoneration, that may have just been a way of just, let's get everybody off their back.
Yeah.
They're probably, but at the same time, like, I don't really follow true crime very much, and a lot of times when this stuff comes on the news, especially, well, back then I was, 13 years old when this happened, I didn't see a lot of it. But what I do remember is, like, the parents. It was,
as far as I knew,
it was the parents did it.
The
parents
was out on me.
And that says a lot as far as the little bit of, like, the little bit I got into it, that was what I initially saw. So it's like, you know, you hear those types of things that no matter what, forever, exonerated or not, they're guilty in the eyes of many people.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel for them if they didn't actually do it. I feel for them if they had to cover up for, you know, their son doing it. I feel for Burke. I feel for him. You know what I mean? I can't imagine if
he was a kid that did this by accident because he was having a fight with his sister, because there apparently had been reports of things happening between the two of them before this that maybe even required medical attention. I feel bad for him either way. You know what I mean? Like, because I don't think he did it on purpose. If he did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's really hard for a nine-year-old to consciously commit murder.
Yeah, that it's going to actually be strong enough to kill my sister.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, they don't, that's why he wouldn't have been facing, you know, what.
Well, at nine years old, you should never face that. 13, 14, yeah, you start to face adult crimes and, you know, you can think about it. But at nine, like, I was worried about, I was worried about baseball and, you know, that's about it, you know. You know, you don't think about, you know, life things at those at that point.
Absolutely.
So I, you know, I feel for him. I feel for the family. I hope it gets solved one day.
I mean, really, the
unfortunate thing in all of these situations is, like, I mean, if it's the family, there's no closure. The closure should be for the family. So if it's the family,
Patsy died not knowing, you know. I mean, I'm assuming she didn't know already.
So there's no closure along those lines. It's more or less for us to know what happened. So, you know, if it doesn't get solved, it's not gonna bring her back. And if it does get solved, it's not gonna bring her back. So it's kind of a moot point in a way at this point. You know what I mean? Unless it was an intruder or it was someone that wasn't a part of the family that we don't know about, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, yeah, good. Glad we got that MF-er, or whoever it was, you know. So, but let's hope for something like that, you know. So, and let's hope that the next Girlfriend's Guide to True Crime isn't with dead children.
The next one is going to be about a thief.
His name is the Grinch, and it's about how he stole Christmas.
Maybe we will do that. Yeah, do a little crossover episode.
Go behind motives and what did him this and how he got this way and all that stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, why don't we? Yeah, we'll use that as a crossover to you telling us about your podcast, there, Nick.
Well, my podcast is called The Boyfriend's Guide to Pop Culture, where Meg and I basically switch roles, and I bring her into the world of everything from movies to TV shows to music to what have you and whatnot, and anything that covers or is under the umbrella of pop culture, we cover on The Boyfriend's Guide to Pop Culture.
Alrighty.
I don't think I said pop culture enough in those sentences, so I'll say it one more time, pop culture.
Okay.
I think that was five times. I don't know. I'm getting loopy here.
Well, with that, we're closing it out. Got to get Nick some rest. So if you enjoyed listening to us today, please help us spread the word by rating and reviewing us on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. Please also hit that subscribe button and share us with your family and friends. You can find us at anchor.fm/truecrimeguide. Please help us become better by emailing us with episode suggestions, constructive criticism, or just to say hi at truecrimeguidepodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook. We have our own Facebook page and group that you can become a part of at facebook.com/thegirlfriendsguidetotruecrime. I'm the girlfriend Megan.
And I'm the boyfriend Nick.
That's right. And this has been another episode of The Girlfriend's Guide to True Crime. And as always, please remember to follow the golden rule.